This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Halfway through the program, it's Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. On our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program Jameson Coop. Jameson is the Florida Panthers website. Pardon me, Jameson, all of Jameson Coop is your Twitter handle, Jameson. My apologies for that. You're the Florida Panthers website reporter. We're pleased to have you on to talk a little bit about the Florida Panthers. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. Great to be here.
Our pleasure to have you. Obviously, Jameson, we have to start with what happened earlier this week in Montreal with Max Domi and his sucker punch on Aaron Ekblad, leaving him with a little bit of the raccoon face there, a couple shiners and a little bit of a busted up nose. Domi suspended for the remainder of the preseason. I mean, that's hardly a suspension, hardly a punishment at all from my outsider's perspective.
I know Aaron Ekblad yesterday called it a gift. Bob Boudner didn't want to comment too much, but did say that it felt like it was a light punishment. He also said, you know, the league's in a tough position with those, but, you know, it really, you know, the punishment really didn't fit the crime, it seems like, especially given the fact that, you know, when the photos came out yesterday of Aaron, I think a lot of people realized just how bad it was. Because obviously, being a preseason game, being that it wasn't on TV down here, a lot of people actually didn't know what the aftermath was like, what actually happened. So when they saw Ekblad's face, like you said, with the shiners, with the broken nose, everyone was like, wow, maybe this was a little bit worse than we thought. So, I mean, the Panthers, you saw them say, you know, they're talking about, you know, settling the score. The teams play again in December. We'll see what happens with that. Obviously, it's a ways away. But, I mean, for the Panthers, I mean, they're already moving on. They're looking ahead. This is a team they know is thinking about the playoffs, so they can't waste too much time thinking about a preseason fight.
Jameson, Aaron Ekblad, as you know, has the concussion history. Was there a lot of concern that there could be some issue there with his concussion history? And is there any chance that he's going to miss some preseason action? Is there any concern that, you know, this is going to affect his ability to prepare for the regular season?
I think the concern was mainly just with us up in the press box watching, but talking down to Ekblad yesterday, and Bob, Ek said, you know, he got down, he, you know, he saw he was bloody, went right off the ice. You know, New York called. He had to go through concussion testing. He said he wasn't too nervous about passing it. He said he sometimes, you know, always does well on the baseline stuff. Then you have the adrenaline going, so you never know. But he said he passed with flying colors. There was no worry there. So obviously, with the history, you do worry about that. That's why you don't want a guy like Aaron Ekblad fighting in the preseason. That's why you don't want him fighting at all, even though he usually does take a fight or two during the season. But he's fine. He's completely healthy. He said it was a little bit difficult breathing through his nose, he said, during practice yesterday. But he said he got through that fine. So as long as the breathing fine with the nose and everything, I think he'll be right back out there when the team takes the ice in Tampa in a couple days. He's obviously playing tonight in Tulsa, Oklahoma against the Stars. The Panthers are going with a lot of the younger guys tonight. So I think he's fine. It's not going to carry over to the regular season. There's really nothing to worry about from the Ekblad's point of view.
You know, Jameson, the Fuller Panthers were one of the hottest teams in the second half of last season, obviously falling just short of making the playoffs. We know it's hard to, quote, continue the momentum you finished with at the end of the season into the next season. But just how important and just how much talk is there in Florida about getting off to a good start this season?
That's the talk. It's the only talk, really. I mean, that's kind of the motto for this team this year, is that every point counts and you got to have a hot start because, you know, are the Panthers as good as they were in the second half? I don't think so. I don't think any team really can keep that pace for an entire season, but they're obviously not as bad as they were in the first half of last season, where they only won four of their first 14 games. So if they can be somewhere right in the middle, they're going to be a team that, you know, can push for 98, 100 points, you know, find a spot in the playoffs. But that's the message right now with Bob Boudner. That's why they're really trying to figure out their lineup here early. They really want to come out of the gate hot. They obviously have a tough schedule. You play in Tampa, then you play Columbus at home. There's a lot of tough games there and a lot of road games there in the first 2 months of the season. So for the Panthers, it really is about coming out hot, because this is a team that I think once they find their groove, they know they can cruise. So it's just kind of about getting off on that good foot and then kind of just taking that momentum. Because even when the Panthers made this the postseason a couple of years ago, they needed a 12-game winning streak to get there. I mean, this is a team that for the past several seasons has been pretty cold in the start and pretty hot in the second half. So that's got to stop here. They know, and they've got to become a consistent team, you know, from game one all the way to game 82.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Our guest on the program is Jameson Olive. Jameson is the website reporter for the Florida Panthers, talking about the Panthers as they look to bounce back to being a playoff team in this upcoming season. Jameson, you mentioned Bob Bugner in a couple of your answers there. Obviously, his second year behind the bench now for the Panthers. How do you see him changing, if at all, from his first season as their head coach?
For him, it's really not a ton of changes. I mean, that was kind of the thing. He came in last season with a huge, new system. There was, he said there was, 40 new things to learn a day at practice for the guys. And this season's really about just kind of continuing all the stuff they did last season. Because if you talk to the guys, the reason they played so well in the second half was because they said, hey, we figured out the system. We started executing and we saw the results. And if you ask them why they played poor in the beginning, it's because they say we didn't follow the system. We didn't get it yet. So that was really kind of the real key and the real talk after last season end was all about Bob and his system. And you saw a guy like Troy Brower when he came in, he said, hey, I was really excited that I signed with the Panthers once I saw, the system that Bob Bugner has. So although, like you said, he's only coming into his second season, he's already getting a really good reputation of, not only being a player's coach for the most part, but just being a guy that has an exciting system that where you want to play in because it is up-tempo, it is fast, and guys can get a lot of points in it. So for him, not a lot of changes. Kind of like I said, just kind of following that line he's already built and really kind of seeing where it takes him.
Jameson, Henrik Borgstrom is a top prospect in the Panthers system. As you mentioned, the Panthers play the Stars tonight. He's going to play center, even though he's a natural winger. And this is a player who was a Hobie Baker nominee last year. He won the national championship, as you know, with the University of Denver. There are a lot of pundits that are already predicting that Henrik Borgstrom is going to be one of the Calder finalists. Maybe he's even a Calder favorite right now, and there is a lot of fanfare for Borgstrom. What's impressed you most about Borgstrom here early on in training camp, and what are realistic expectations for him this year?
Well, you got that flip there a little bit. He's a natural center who got switched to the wing. So that's kind of been the big talk here at camp right now is he came into camp. People all thought he was going to stick at center, but then looking up down the middle for the Panthers, you have Barkov, Trocheck, and now Jared McCann's really locked in that 3C spot. So there really wasn't a place for him. So last game in Montreal, they moved him to the wing for the first time, and what he said was about 5 or 6 years that he's played on the wing, and he looked great. He was out there with Jared McCann and Dennis Mulgan on the right wing, and Bob said, hey, this is a line I liked a lot. It's a line you're going to see again when the team goes to Tampa most likely. So that could be a spot. I mean, that was a tough thing. There's a lot of depth for the Panthers right now in the bottom six. There was no way he was going to crack that top six with how good it is right now. So he had to find that spot, and it kind of looks like finally he might have found it there on the third line left wing. So if he can get that time while also getting some power play time, which he saw quite a bit of in Montreal, there's, like you said, there's a real opportunity to start putting up a lot of points and can be in that Calder conversation because he's a top-tier talent. He's the Panthers' top prospect. I think he's one of the top prospects in hockey, like you said. I mean, they call him the artist for a reason. He does amazing things on offense. So for him, it's really more just rounding out that two-way game because if he has the puck, if he has some open ice, he can do some great things.
Jameson, the Ekblad punch by Domi kind of overshadowed the news that Alexander Barkov was named the 10th captain, I believe, of the Florida Panthers, taking over for Derek McKenzie. Why was this the right time to hand him the captaincy?
It just was because even when you talked to DMACC, he said, outright, very humbly, was like, hey, when I got the C, I knew that one day this was going to happen. Whether it was in, 2 weeks later or 2 years later, I knew it was coming because this is their team. Because this is what the Panthers have been building, since Dale Tallon got here in 2010. I mean, with Barkov, Trocheck, Ekblad, Huberto, the list goes on of all these high picks and all these top talents that have just been slowly developing and slowly coming together to build this core. And given that, like you said, we're in the second year of Bob Bugner, they're coming off a successful second half last year. They're only thinking playoffs this year. Not only playoffs, they're thinking about, winning a round this year, really getting in there and fighting. So given that the Panthers, that their window's really starting to open now with this core, as most of these guys have 4 or 5 years left on their contracts, they're kind of all entering their primes, if not, a few years away from their prime, which is great. The window's opening, and they want, to go into that window, into that new era under new leadership, and that's Barkov, who, one of the best players in the league. I mean, Vincent Trocheck said it's only him, Sidney Crosby, and Connor McDavid, which, it's crazy to hear, but the fact that even his teammates think that of him kind of shows you why he's the captain, because he does carry that much respect in the room. I mean, he's usually the first guy, one of the first guys on the ice for practice, pretty much always the last guy to leave. He's become a fan of those, midnight skates at the arena like Jágr used to do, which I think he picked up from Jágr. I mean, he puts in all the work. He works harder than any guy on the team, and he really does set that bar high for everyone else.
Jameson Olive is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jameson is a website reporter for the Florida Panthers. We're talking about the Panthers ahead of the 2018-19 regular season. Jameson, you look at this Panthers team, and up front, they really do appear to be quite loaded. We mentioned Sasha Barkov, Nick Bjugstad, Huberto, Trocheck. The guy that they bring in the offseason, they bring him in, from Ottawa, but via San Jose as well, is, of course, Mike Hoffman. And we know how things ended poorly in Canada's nation's capital. Is it sort of a clean slate for Mike Hoffman as he enters into the Panthers dressing room?
Oh, it's a completely clean slate. I mean, not only because the team kind of, you know, before that even happened, Dale Tallon, you know, ran it past some of the key guys in the leadership group, made sure they were okay with it. They all gave the green light, so the Panthers obviously went through with it. But, I mean, Bob Boudner even said he sat down to lunch with Mike Hoffman and his girlfriend, you know, loved what they had to say, loved meeting them. I mean, he comes down here with a completely clean slate. He's already making a good impression. All the guys, you know, welcoming him with open arms. And for them, like they all said when he got here, is, you know, they just want to get a good hockey player. And just given how he looked in that preseason game in Montreal on the power play with all the shots he was firing, I mean, I think he's going to have a huge year here. And the good thing is he's here for 2 years. He's got 2 years left in that deal. So he's you know, not a part of that young core, but he's going to be a huge part of this team for at least the next two seasons. And I don't think any of the baggage that he had in Montreal, Ottawa, you know, followed him here to South Florida.
Jameson, I wanted to ask you about the goaltending. Obviously, it was a tough year for Roberto Luongo last year. He had the injury problems, and he only ended up playing less than half of the season. Do you expect this year to be a similar situation where you have James Reimer and Roberto Luongo sharing the starts, or is it possible that we see, you know, Roberto Luongo get back to somewhere around 50 to 60 games?
Well, if everyone's healthy, both Bob and Lou have said, you know, they're okay with, you know, Lou kind of targeting around 50 starts to be the number. So that's kind of the goal here. That's the bar they're setting. And it, like I said, if he's healthy, I think he'll definitely reach that and play great hockey because, you know, he only played, you know, 30-ish starts last year, but he was fantastic when he did. 929 save percentage, one of the best in his career, you know, at least in over a decade. So he's already proven, yeah, he's 39. Yeah, this is his 19th season, but, you know, he's still, there's a reason he's a future Hall of Famer. There's a reason, you know, he is Roberto Luongo, and he keeps proving that. And it all comes down to the work he puts in on the ice. I mean, he's added at least almost 2 hours to his daily routine here for game days. And it's tough, obviously, but the reason he does it is because he wants to win that Stanley Cup. And I think he sees now with where this team's going with, like you said, the top six as loaded as it is, and, you know, guys like Yandel and Ekblad and Matt, some of the blue line, that this, you know, this team is close. And I think that's what kind of drives him to, you know, keep working every day and keep going out there at almost 40 to, you know, put his best foot forward. But outside of Luongo, James Reimer still got that backup position locked up. Played great last year when Lou went down, you know, made 18 and 19 starts and, you know, kept the Panthers in the playoff hunt. And then I think bringing in Michael Hutchinson as that third-string goaltender was a really smart insurance policy because, you know, Reimer got hurt last year, Luongo got hurt last year. I mean, it's goaltending. You need three goaltenders in the NHL now. Somebody always gets hurt, whether it is Reimer or Luongo. Somebody's probably going to miss some time, and you need that third-string guy. And Hutchinson, obviously, coming off a huge season in the AHL, and, you know, obviously has a lot of NHL experience with Winnipeg as well. So I like that move a lot. I think the Panthers' goaltending situation gets overblown a little bit. I think there's too many people, you know, outside of South Florida that still don't have a ton of faith in Roberto Luongo, but I think once you see him playing and once he proves that he can be healthy, that, you know, a lot of people are going to catch on.
Jameson, you know, we always talk about the top-end talent, but sometimes it's important to focus on those role players. What about young players who potentially could push through from training camp, maybe someone from played on Springfield last year? Is there anybody that you've got your eye on in training camp right now with Florida?
A couple of those guys, like you said, Borgstrom, I think, after last game, might have at least locked down a spot on opening night on that third line. Dennis Mulligan's a guy that's, you know, played a career-high 50-ish games last year. He'll probably be on that third line as well. But, and kind of guys looking to break through in that fourth line, I mean, you have a guy like Dryden Hunt, who obviously had big numbers back in juniors, you know, 100-plus points. He's kind of been finding his way for his first two seasons down here in Springfield. He played a handful of games with the Panthers last year. He's a guy that's, like, really good coming into camp. Could be a guy that if he doesn't contest for a spot on that fourth line, would definitely, he's positioned himself to be one of those early call-ups. Anthony Greco is an incredibly fast skater. He's a guy that could also push to be one of those early call-ups. But other than that, as far as the defense goes, it's a little bit tougher because the Panthers do return all seven defensemen from last year with the addition of Bogdan Kiselevich, who looks like he's going to be starting in the top six after coming over from Russia. But Jacob McDonald, he's looked really good at camp. I don't think he's going to crack the starting lineup right away, but, you know, after leading Binghamton in scoring last year, actually leading all AHL defensemen in scoring last year, he's looked great at camp so far. He's a guy that, you know, say if a Matheson or Ekblad or a Yandel ever went down, I think he might be the first call-up to fill in for one of those guys. So there's a lot of depth guys here this year. The Panthers probably have, you know, probably about eight guys fighting for those three spots on the fourth line there, since it seems like the third line's, you know, figured itself out a little bit. So a lot of depth here, a lot of competition, but those are just a couple of the names that really stuck out.
Jameson Olive covers the Florida Panthers. Jameson, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll do it again real soon.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
Take care, Jameson. When we come back, we discuss Max Domi's punch to Aaron Ekblad. Did the NHL get the suspension right? We'll talk about it next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Ekblad and Domi are having a conversation. I think Max wants a little piece of Ekblad here, and he's not... Oh, he's going to make... Oh, jeez. Well...
Domi can throw a punch. Ask Brian Kesler.
Max Domi will be out of this game, I would imagine, as they were battling in the corner, and Ekblad was not going to get involved, and Max Domi would not let it go.
Anytime a broadcaster says, oh, geez, in the course of narrating a highlight, you know that something good is going on the ice. That, of course, was from this week's exhibition game between the Florida Panthers and the Montreal Canadiens. Max Domi went a little nutty on Aaron Ekblad, punching him in the face, getting a match penalty, and then ultimately getting suspended for the remainder of the preseason. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. Remember, if you love Bernstein's as much as we do, why don't you leave them a 5-star review on TripAdvisor? You know, it seems like every season there's always one really stupid activity during the exhibition season, and this one appears to be Max Domi on the Montreal Canadiens. Gets suspended for the remainder of the preseason. Was that enough, given, you know, the damage he inflicted on Aaron Ekblad? And, I mean, from my perspective, it wasn't. I'll let you, you know, opine on your own as well. But why does the NHL think that being suspended for the preseason is ever a punishment?
Right, and it's not a punishment for obvious reasons, right? Because you don't lose any money.
Yeah.
And Max Domi was not going to play all the preseason games anyways.
Right.
I mean, how many preseason games was he going to play? 3, 4 maybe?
I mean,
four at most.
I don't know if the Habs play 6 or 7 or 8, but he wasn't going to play more than half of them, that's for sure.
Right. So, I mean, it's not going to affect his wallet.
Yeah.
And most importantly, you know, I don't think it sends the right message across the NHL. Now, the fact of the matter is that it was a sucker punch. Aaron Ekblad clearly was not interested in engaging with Max Domi. Aaron Ekblad is not a guy that's known for being a physical player, a guy that, to my knowledge, has maybe never dropped the gloves in his career. He certainly hasn't dropped the gloves in the NHL. I don't think he has. Maybe, you know, we can do a search on hockey fights, but
doing it right now.
I'm pretty sure he has not fought at the NHL level. So the point is, guys, it was a sucker punch. It was cheap, and Max Domi should have not done it. And
Four career fights in the NHL.
It's four more than I thought he had.
Yeah. He had 3 last year, apparently. Anyways, go on.
Wow, that's surprising. You know, maybe I should watch more Panthers, but when you don't suspend him for a regular season game, what that does is that doesn't hurt him at all, and it doesn't prevent that type of incident from happening again. So I think when you have a player like Ekblad, who's a star,
yeah,
a former first overall pick back in 2014, I think it doesn't send the right message. So I'm with you, Drew. I absolutely could have been in agreement with a 1-game or 2-game suspension, but the precedent is there. When these types of incidents happen in the preseason, usually you don't get suspended in the regular season.
Yeah, Dave, it's not, I mean, from my perspective, this isn't a difficult decision for NHL Department of Player Safety. We see some of them in the course of the season where a guy comes in for a hit and the guy moves at the last second and, you know, and what is intended to be a clean legal hit turns dirty on a dime. This is just a dirty play from start to finish by Max Domi, yet I just don't know what the hesitancy is by the Department of Player Safety for suspending a guy for a game or 2 games in the regular season. It seems like a no-brainer. Yet every time you think that they're going to make an easy decision, they miss the layup.
Well, and the interesting thing is, as he just touched on, you don't really know how many games he was going to miss. How many games was he going to play? Was he going to play 1 more game, 2 more games? Maybe this wasn't really a suspension. Like, it's not like he can't train with his team. He's going to continue to train with the team. He's just going to play meaningless games. Okay, so he's lost a couple of meaningless games, but he's still, as you know, Josh Clipperton talked about, going to play that first game of the regular season, which obviously is going to mean a lot to him. I think it's Montreal and Toronto, in Toronto.
Yeah.
So he gets that. He still, there's no punishment. To me, it's really, and you know, you saw the reaction. A lot of like NHLers were not happy with the play. We're complaining about it on Twitter and stuff like that. So, you know, clearly those guys, I mean, obviously you're going to get people who feel like that it wasn't the end of the world, but for the most part, it seems like most people to agree that that merited something that actually was going to hurt the player. The fact of the matter is Aaron Ekblad's walking around with two shiners, and I don't know if his nose was actually broken, but it looked pretty busted up. And the fact of the matter is that Max Domi is really, like as he said, he's not lighter in the pocketbook. He's not missing any regular season games, so there's no real ramifications in that regard. So what is the punishment for him? Nothing.
And I agree with you, Dave. It's not the end of the world, but this is a preseason game.
Right.
Like, what is Max Domi thinking that Aaron Ekblad's going to fight him? And I don't care what anybody says. You know, we've played hockey, and, you know, that argument that, well, he still has to protect himself.
No, it's nonsense.
It was a sucker punch.
It's the preseason.
I mean, when a guy, and we've watched it. I mean, I personally have watched this probably at least 15 times now, because obviously I knew we were going to talk about it today, but Ekblad clearly is not interested. And Domi gives him a couple of, you know, short left punches.
Yeah.
You know, he's kind of roughing him up a little bit, holding on to his jersey. It's a sucker punch. A sucker punch is a sucker punch is a sucker punch. It's cheap. And I actually like Max Domi as a hockey player. And obviously his dad was a great hockey player as well for the Jets and the Leafs, but you just can't do that, period.
You know, there's no obligation, to your point, Ezzy, that Aaron Ekblad, you know, get involved with Max Domi. It just, nothing about it made any sense.
What about this, Drew? If Aaron Ekblad suffered another concussion,
well, that's just it.
Do you think the NHL would have suspended him one or two regular season games? Probably.
I don't know. You watch the NFL nowadays, and you can't even hit a quarterback. They do everything in their power in the NFL to protect their stars.
Yep.
And the stars are their quarterbacks, so you can't. You saw some of the tackles that are clean hits by anybody's definition that get flagged for unnecessary roughness when you watch the NFL on a Sunday or a Monday. And then you look at the NHL, and Aaron Ekblad is a star for the Florida Panthers. He might not be a household name in all the other 30 cities in the NHL, but he was a former first overall pick. He's got all the talent in the world to eventually win a Norris Trophy and be talked about among the best defensemen in the NHL. Yet the NHL refuses to protect their stars. And there's no reason why they don't do it. It is in an instance like this where it's a clear-cut case. You just suspend Max Domi for a few games. You don't have to think hard about it. It shouldn't be a difficult decision. It's, okay, you sucker punch this guy who's a star. Why don't you go sit for a few games, and then you'll rethink your actions? Instead, they hand out this mealy-mouthed nothingness of a penalty. And you hear Aaron Ekblad in his comments yesterday saying, you know, justice will be served eventually, because they realize that the players are going to have to dish out the justice. And now Ekblad's probably going to get a phone call from the NHL saying, don't you do anything you shouldn't do.
Well, and that's the problem. You've got Frontier Justice, and you've got players who are going to be after Domi. I think it's December 28th when Florida and Montreal play next. So that's clearly going to be someone going after him. It won't be Ekblad because obviously it's too obvious.
Yeah.
So he can't go after him based on his comments. He's now, you know, precluded himself.
The Panthers also don't want him going after him necessarily.
I'm not suggesting otherwise, but yeah. I'm just saying that, you know, he now can't do it. So the fact of the matter is one of his teammates, you know, maybe Haley, if you will, who's not exactly a shrinking violet, and Michael Haley, and Max Domi may not exactly want to take him on because he is tough as nails.
Yeah, Haley's tough.
And so the point
he's a guy that I know that has some fights at the NHL level.
Yeah.
He had 212 penalty minutes last year.
No, and he is tough as nails. So my point is that December 28th game, when Michael Haley is patrolling, you know, around the ice, Max Domi's going to have his head on a swivel, because the reality is, whether it's a sucker punch or a straight-up punch that he knows it's coming on December 28th. You can put that in the bank. That's a lock. That is going to happen because the Panthers are unhappy with the justice that was, you know, meted out by the NHL. And the fact of the matter is, you may not entirely be satisfied, but they may feel like, okay, you know, look, they didn't give him 10 games. Obviously, it wouldn't have merited 10 games. But the fact is, there's some pain. There was some damage to the player. In this instance, the only player who got damaged was the one who got punched in the face.
I enjoyed Max Domi's excuse. I got carried away. I lost, you know, I didn't mean to hurt him. You punched the guy in the face. You meant to hurt him.
Well, like Josh Clipperton said, I don't know anybody who punches someone in the face and didn't intend to cause some damage.
That's right. And I got carried away. I lost my mind. It's the first preseason game. It's the exhibition season, dude. I mean, you're losing your mind in the exhibition season?
I mean, the thing is, I get it. He's trying to make an impression in Montreal. He feels that, you know, he didn't get maybe a fair shake, you know, with the Coyotes. So I think from his perspective, he's trying to show Montreal, like, look, you've got something in me that is going to be a special type of player. But I just don't think – so, I mean, look, he maybe he's right. Maybe he did lose his head. But that doesn't defeat what he did. Yeah. And the fact that
his intent was still to punch the guy in the face.
But to punch it again, if two guys agree to dance, then that's fine. You've agreed, and you're going to drop the gloves, and you're going
to
go at it.
But it takes two to tango.
And, you know, Aaron Ekblad clearly didn't want to fight. And if a guy doesn't want to fight, then you can chirp him, but you can't sucker punch him.
I agree with you. In the meantime, as we go to commercial, you two are going to foxtrot together, I think, after your tangoing.
We're more of a, what do you think, Ez? Like, we'll do the waltz, maybe?
How about the ballroom blitz? Are you going to do a ballroom blitz?
I don't know, Drew. That was what you were doing back in the net 20, so.
It's a song.
I understand the song.
Okay, I just want to make sure you know it's a song. Anyways, when we come back, we're going to talk about the New Jersey Devils. They come to town on Thursday for the Jets' final preseason game. Our good friend of the program, Amanda Stein, covers the team. She's going to join us next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on this Saturday morning on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter, @IllegalCurve. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome to the program our very good friend, Amanda Stein. She's a digital and beat reporter for the New Jersey Devils. Amanda, always a pleasure and a happy new year to you.
Thank you. You guys too. I really appreciate you having me on. It's been a while.
It has been a while. We're always pleased to get an opportunity to chat with you. The Devils going to be in Winnipeg on Thursday for the final preseason game for the Winnipeg Jets. You know, you look at this New Jersey Devils team, Amanda, and last year I think they sort of surprised the majority of people. I don't know how many people necessarily had them pegged as a playoff team, but lo and behold, there they were in the first round of the playoffs against the Tampa Bay Lightning. Now that they won't sneak up on teams, now that they won't be a surprise team anymore, how do the Devils replicate and build upon what they did last season?
Well, it's not easy because obviously it really seemed to go right for them last year. They didn't have much of an injury bug. You had Taylor Hall having a career year, winning the Hart Trophy, so that's no surprise to anyone. But I think what is best suited for these guys is that they had a roster last year that was so, so, so young. I mean, you had Igor Hischier coming right out of the draft. You had Jesper Bratton, just 19 years old. You have Pavel Zacha, who was just 20 years old at the time. And you're looking at a team that gained a ton of experience from what they went through last year, from being the underdogs all last year and proving people wrong. I think a lot of this young part of the team really gained a ton of experience that's only going to make them better. Now, of course, it's going to be harder when you know that there's a bit of a target on your back. But at the same time, I have to admit, from things I'm reading and things that I'm hearing, is that people are still counting them out. Because people think last year, reporters or whatever you want to say, they think that it was a fluke last year, that because everything went right and because Taylor Hall had a career year, that was the only reason that things went into the playoffs, so there's a lot of discussion this year when I talk to the players about how they have to prove that last year was not a fluke, and that's what's motivating this team right now.
Amanda, I got to ask you about the goaltending. Corey Schneider, I think you'd agree, had a tough year last year with the injuries, and he's obviously recovering from off-season hip surgery. And you know, when you look at the goaltending situation, obviously Keith Kincaid played more games than he'd ever played before in his career, and he stepped up and he became the Devils' number one goaltender. I guess first part of the question, it was Corey Schneider going to be ready for opening night? And how important is this year for Corey Schneider? Because, as I mentioned, I mean, last year definitely didn't go how he wanted it to go.
Yeah, so that's an excellent question because there's a lot of question marks surrounding Corey Schneider. Now, to answer your first part of the question, right now he's on track for his 5-month recovery, which doesn't take him to opening night. It takes him a little bit past opening night. So right now we don't know if he's going to be able to play opening night. But the good news is that he's now had two practices in a row where he's competed in the full hour-long practice, which we haven't seen at all throughout training camp up until the last 2 days. So there's a lot of positive when it comes to Corey Schneider. And the other thing about him is, you know, wondering in his longevity. Will this surgery really, you know, is this going to fix what the problem was? And the only answer I can give you to that is yes, because of what I've spoken to him about. And it's that he feels better than he has in years, because this has been a lingering issue that they've been putting off. And finally, they decided to address it, you know, once and for all, and give him that 5 month recovery period. And he says that he's feeling better than he has in many, many years. So now I think it's about the recovery process, not wanting to push him so that he doesn't have any setbacks. So he's an extremely important piece of this, you know, puzzle for the New Jersey Devils. He makes a lot of money. He is a number one goaltender. And I think personally, when he is at the top of his game, he's an elite in this league.
You know, Amanda, there's four remaining RFAs in the NHL, one of whom is a member of the New Jersey Devils in Miles Wood. There's talk right now, I'm seeing, that a deal may be imminent with between his camp and the New Jersey Devils. One, is the deal close to getting done? And two, how important is this player for your squad?
Well, certainly, I mean, he had 19 goals last year, and you can't discredit how helpful having 19 goals is. And when it comes to whether a deal is imminent or not, it's hard for me to really talk about, because I work for the team, so I'm not like privy to all those discussions, and I don't go digging around for, you know, sources and stuff like that, because I actually work for the team. So it's a bit of a different situation than when I worked at TSN covering the Montreal Canadiens, where I could go and find my sources. But being in-house, things are a little bit different when I do my job now. All I know is that this team would love to have Miles Wood back, and that they'd love to have him back before this team heads off to Europe. I think that's a really important thing, is that we leave for Winnipeg on Wednesday, and from Winnipeg we head right to Europe on a 13-day road trip.
Amanda Stein is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're talking about the New Jersey Devils. They're in town to face the Jets on Thursday night as part of the final preseason game for the Jets. Amanda, Marcus Johansson came over from the Washington Capitals last season, and it was a bit of a lost year. There were a number of concussions, a number of injuries. He was only limited to 29 games played last season. You know, what can the Devils expect from Marcus Johansson, and, you know, hopefully what won't be such an injury-riddled season?
Well, I think that, you know, you're absolutely right when it comes to Marcus Johansson and the year that he had last year. It was really disappointing, not just for the team, but for Marcus himself, because he's had, like, if you actually look at his stats, he's had a remarkably healthy career up until last year, missing something like 10 games over the course of his career up until last year when he got his concussion. So I think they're expecting more of the same from Marcus Johansson and what he brought in Washington. That is, you know, who they want to see. And they're not hard on him, because it was a difficult season for him last year. It wasn't his fault that these things happened. So they're expecting him to really step up to the plate, be more accommodated with being in New Jersey, being a member of this franchise, understanding the way that John Hines likes to do things. He's a very tough and demanding coach, but guys seem to really like him, and be an active leader in terms of the offense on this team. That's where, you know, this team is really looking for him to step up and develop into that role.
Amanda, a player on the Devils I always watch with a lot of interest is Pavel Zacha, and he's entering his third career NHL season. It's hard to believe that he's only 21 years old, and, you know, he was a sixth overall pick back in 2015, the year McDavid and Eichel were drafted, of course, and, you know, this is a player who, you know, was a little bit disappointing last year, and all reports that I've read out of New Jersey is that Pavel Zacha has looked in better shape and he's looked really strong so far in the preseason. Is it safe to say that John Hines is going to expect, not just John Hines, but the Devils organization and maybe Zacha himself, they're going to expect more out of him this year?
So I'm really glad you brought him up, because one thing from, like, dealing with the fan base here in New Jersey is that they do really get down on him quite a bit. When you're drafted sixth overall, there's a ton of expectation on you. Obviously, it's not first or second, but six is still a very high number, so the expectations are there. And I think people forget that he's just 21, and that's when, you know, players are starting to come into their own and understand, you know, what type of player that they need to be, you know, save for a McDavid who can come into the league and just dominate right away. But the interesting thing about Zacha is that he obviously is not from the United States, but he has spent the last two summers here training with the training staff and training at our facility at Prudential Center, really, again, acclimatizing himself to, you know, the United States lifestyle and being here. And I think that that will also help him a lot, just being more comfortable in and around the facility and just where he is. And he's definitely taken, like, shed some pounds of, this is terrible to say, of fat, even though, like, there no one in, you know, the NHL is fat, but, and really put on some muscle. And he just looks lighter on his skates. And you're seeing in the preseason play that he's been able to be on the ice. John Hines is relying on him. The other night, he had over 18 minutes of ice time, which is the first time in his career that that has happened. And so there's a lot of, you know, dependability. This is a big year for him to prove himself and that he can live up to those expectations. And speaking to him, he says to me that the most important thing for him is to show that he can be a reliable player. And that's a buzzword that John Hines uses a lot, is reliability, dependability, and stability. These are the things that John Hines is looking for in his players, because that makes for the course of an 82-game season, things can kind of go a little more smoothly.
Amanda, we're about a week into the training camp so far, and are there any players that have caught your eye that you were maybe not expecting, or just a player that's caught your eye?
I don't know if you know the players, because there's a lot of younger guys who are trying to make the squad this year because there are some open spots for the Devils. But a young player out of Merrimack University, Brett Sini, he's sort of a smaller stature guy, a bit older. He's 22 years old. He plays really with the New Jersey Devils mentality of speed first and, like, you know, being smart with your speed. He's been a bit of a standout. Joey Anderson, also out of college, they signed him in April last year. He's been able to make a difference in this preseason play. And another player from the OHL, Marian Studenich, is another player who also I would keep your eye on. The interesting thing about the Devils this year, guys, is that there are spots available. So when you're watching in training camp, you're really watching these young players compete for spots. That's what's happening in this training camp. Sometimes when you go into a training camp, you know what your lineup's going to look like and just sort of about fixing the chemistry or finding the right chemistry. There are three spots available right now, especially with Miles Wood not signed. And so you're watching the level of competition with the Devils really compete at a very high level.
Last question for you, Amanda. We're talking with Amanda Stein. She covers the New Jersey Devils. You mentioned after the Devils come to Winnipeg on Thursday, they then head out overseas for an extended road trip. That's obviously not typical for how a team starts the season. How are the Devils sort of preparing their players for the irregular end to training camp and the irregular beginning to the regular season?
Yeah, it's definitely unique, and I don't know how, like, personally thrilled I am. Not that I don't love Winnipeg, but that we fly all the way to Winnipeg to go all the way to Europe seems a little backwards to me, but, you know, I just go by the schedule. But they're treating it as a business trip. There are no planned activities in terms of having families there. Like, families can come on their own, but there's nothing special planned for the families. One of the things that I've talked to Ray Shiro about, the general manager, which is really important, is that this is a business trip. They are playing an exhibition game against SC Bern in Switzerland, but then they open their season with 2 points on the line, which is very cliche to say, but very true, against the Edmonton Oilers. So they want to get off to a good start, and so they're treating this like a business trip. That's what you're going to hear. That's the cliche that you hear in the locker room, but it's very true. It is a very organized trip that will keep them on the same schedule, that will try and prevent as much jet lag as possible, just so that they can feel as normal as possible. And then there's a few days off once we get back into New Jersey before we kick off our season in North America.
Amanda Stein covers the New Jersey Devils for the team website. Amanda,
hold on a second, though. Amanda, does this mean you're not going to get to try the Illegal Curve sandwich from Bernstein's Deli?
I would love to. What does it entail?
It entails a lot of unhealthy food, that's for sure. But
I could do it.
Okay.
In Winnipeg, right?
We can hook it up.
Of course
we can
it's in Winnipeg.
Yeah, we know the owner.
Okay, well, I mean, I'm going to be in Winnipeg. We arrive we leave on Wednesday, and we're there till Friday because we stay overnight after the game.
We'll make it happen.
There will be an Illegal Curve sandwich waiting for you, Amanda.
At the rink?
No, at the deli. But I can arrange that. I mean, I can arrange it to be at the rink, too.
That would be so cool. I feel so honored.
There you go. Well, we'll make something happen. We want to make sure Winnipeg's still number one in your heart.
Because, Amanda, you weren't able to stay last time. You guys left right after, so.
We did. So, but this time we went out one night, but it was so cold, guys. I've become so soft since I've moved down to New Jersey.
Seriously, you've forgotten your roots in Montreal.
So bad. It's so bad. Like, my Canadian blood has just like disappeared, and now I think like minus 15 is freezing.
Well, we'll replace that Canadian blood with some solid sandwich from Bernstein's Deli.
I love it. It was so much fun talking to you guys. I so appreciate you still connecting with me, even though I'm covering the Devils and not the Canadiens anymore.
Well, we cover the whole NHL, and you're number one in our hearts, Amanda. We'll see you on Thursday at the rink.
All right. See you guys.
Take care. Amanda Stein covers the New Jersey Devils. When we come back, what are we going to talk about? We're going to talk about which coach or GM is under the most pressure at the start of the 2018-19 NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
And we have to be competitive in exhibition games, and we have to get prepared for the season so that we are accepting of doing things right from day one, not cutting corners, not finding or attempting to win the easy way. We got to win the hard way.
Edmonton Oilers head coach Todd McClellan, certainly one of the coaches in the league under the most pressure to start the 2018-19 NHL season.
Drew, we never cut corners on Illegal Curve.
We cut sandwiches. We cut deli. We don't cut corners, right? Is that what you're going to say?
We might cut you after today.
This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. I don't know if you guys saw the CFL on TSN pregame show last night, but Chad Rempel.
Yep.
Bomber long snapper up on stage during the pregame show at Rumors Comedy Club earlier this week, trying his hand at some stand-up comedy.
Was he funny?
I chuckled a little bit as I was watching the pregame show. Apparently, I heard good reviews from the people who were in attendance. I believe it was Tuesday night's show. But anyways, big thank you to our friends at CFL on TSN for coming down to Rumors and filming Chad's first attempt to get on the big stage and do some stand-up comedy.
Yeah, Sarah had a really nice piece on TSN.
Yeah, Sarah did exactly. Yep. Sarah was down there as well, Sarah Orleski.
The good news about being an athlete and a comedian is if anybody doesn't like your comedy, you just beat them up.
That's true. You're usually large enough to just pound them down a little bit. So, you know, you also, you know, helps against hecklers.
Yes.
Who's
going to heckle an athlete?
I'm not going to heckle an athlete. They're likely to punch me in the face and hurt me.
So, well, Ezzy's not an athlete. He's about to sucker punch you.
Yeah. That's also how it usually works.
Never sucker punch anyone, especially Drew.
The best joke of the week happened last Saturday, Dave, as we were leaving the Iceplex after our broadcast.
Go on.
When Sarah and Freddie, her cameraman, pull up and tried to run over Ezzy. That was the best joke of the week.
Shout out to Freddie.
Yeah. Freddie almost, Freddie nicked Ezzy a little bit with
the
car.
We have a little bit of history, right?
Yeah. There's a little bit of bad blood between you and Freddie. And he decided to escalate it a little bit by, you know.
You don't get in Freddie's way.
Well.
You don't get in the way of his shot.
And there's absolutely no truth to the rumor that Dave and I both paid Freddie to try and run Ezzy over, and he was a little too quick avoiding the minivan. But, you know, something for next time. Watch out behind you. You never know when that minivan's going to come at you there, Ezzy. In any event, to purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com.
Maybe we'll take Fred to Rumors.
Well, Freddie was there. You just saw the picture on Instagram or Twitter? He was up on stage as well, you know, pretending to try out his hand at some stand-up comedy at Rumors earlier this week. For those of you who missed out on some Norm MacDonald tickets, I'm hearing a little rumors that they might be trying to add some more shows. So you might want to give Rumors a call, 204-488-4520. Check out the website, rumorscomedyclub.com.
Did you actually hear a birdie, or is that just a figure of speech?
That's a figure of speech. Yeah. It's a turn of phrase, if you will, that there might be some opportunity to see if Norm MacDonald's going to add a couple extra shows.
Have any of you guys, and including our producer, Shawnee Asor, has anybody caught Norm MacDonald has a show on Netflix?
On Netflix?
It's hilarious.
It is very funny. You have to understand the humor.
His humor is very different in
what you're expecting. But I mean,
the episode with Chevy Chase is really funny.
Well, they're talking about their just Saturday Night Live ties together and everything else. I mean, I, you know, I, the fastest selling out shows in the history of Rumors.
Yep.
Norm Macdonald went on sale, of course, last week. Website crashing response.
Yep.
And the shows were sold out in a blink of an eye. So you know that obviously Norm Macdonald is doing something right in that he's going to draw the people down to Rumors coming up later on in October as well. The coaches, general managers under pressure. We just heard from Todd McClellan of the Edmonton Oilers. Peter Chiarelli in Edmonton as well. He's the general manager. A woefully disappointing season in Edmonton last year, and they sort of stood pat. No coaching change, no big roster turnover, a little bit of tweak here, a little bit of tweak there. If the Oilers don't get off to a good start, and you know, in the previous segment, Amanda Stein was on, she mentioned that the Oilers and Devils start overseas in Europe to start the season. If the Oilers don't get off to a good start, is Todd McClellan under some of the most pressure in the entire NHL?
Yeah, and you mentioned Peter Chiarelli as well, Drew, and you know, the Oilers, you know, had the 78-point season last year, and they missed the playoffs by, what, 20 points, at least, you know, 15 yeah. points. And, you know, with everything that happened last year, I mean, and it starts, you know, with the way Milan Lucic played. I mean, Milan Lucic is getting paid a lot of money, guys.
Sure.
And, you know, he has to do better than 10 goals. He went, what was it, 30 games without a goal. And, you know, Cam Talbot struggled as well. And they obviously, you know, didn't have somebody in place to replace him. And, you know, Lauren Brossois is now a member of the Winnipeg Jets, and you had Al Montoya there as well. So they bring in Koskinen from the Russian League, Continental Hockey League, and, you know, they hope that, you know, by paying him $2.5 million, you know, they've figured that out. So they have somebody now a little bit more, I guess, experienced, if you want to call it that, even though he doesn't have a lot of NHL experience. But I think it's pretty clear, guys, that in Edmonton, they're going with what they have, and they're hoping for internal improvements. They need internal improvements. And it starts with some of the younger guys. I mean, Jesse Puljujarvi is one of those players. And it looks like, you know, he's going to get a good shot there on the second line with Leon Draisaitl and Milan Lucic. He's been on the third line as well. He's not going to be on the top line because, as it stands now, it's going to be McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, and Ratty. Maybe he gets up there eventually. But the point is they're going to expect, you know, some contributions from a guy like Yamamoto, who played a little bit with the Oilers last year, Kyler Yamamoto. And,
yeah, young
and
guy. He,
and they're even talking about maybe Evan Bouchard makes this team. Now, I don't know about that. I could see Evan Bouchard going back to the London Knights. And if he goes back to the London Knights, he'll probably score 100 points because he was in the high 80s last year. I want to say he had 87. And if I get that right, that's not in front of me, folks. So, but the point is, I mean, you need more out of Milan Lucic. You're going to need more out of Ryan Strome, your third-line center. I mean, you traded Jordan Eberle to the New York Islanders, so I think they're going to expect more out of Ryan Strome. Kyle Brodziak replaces Mark Letestu there on the fourth line center, but they're going to need more, and they're going to need more from their defensemen. I mean, Oscar Klefbom, Adam Larson, these guys were injured last year. We know Andrei Sekera is not going to start the season with the Oilers. Mm-hmm. He might miss 20 or 30 games with that Achilles injury, Drew. So, I mean, Darnell Nurse, you hope that he maintains the play that he demonstrated last year. He developed into a bona fide top four defenseman. I actually really like Matt Benning there on the third pair. Chris Russell's a good defenseman. Cam Talbot is the key, though. I mean, Cam Talbot is a guy who played 70 games a couple of years ago, and he was a top NHL goaltender, and he's got to be better. And I think he will be better, by the way. So, you know, whether or not the Oilers are a playoff team this year, I don't know. But I know one thing. I don't think they're going to be a 78-point team. They just can't be that bad.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290. We're talking about coaches and general managers throughout the NHL who are under pressure, under the most pressure, if you will, to get off to a good start at this 2018-19 NHL season. Dave Ezzie just sort of opined on the Edmonton Oilers and their situation very well. What other team, what other general manager, what other coach jumps out to you as a guy who needs to get off to a good start to begin this season?
I'd actually go with Edmonton. I really think Edmonton is the focus. I look at some of the other teams that you prepared in your show plan, and I think those guys have a little bit of a longer leash. You know, the Phil Housleys, the Jim Montgomerys, the Bill Peters. I think those guys have a little bit of a longer leash.
Montgomery and Peters, of course, first-year coaches
right.
In Dallas right. and in so, Calgary,
mean,
respectively.
Yeah, I mean, Dallas a little bit more because they have a more veteran team, and they, you know, that team, really, their window to win, I think, is, you know, right now as opposed to probably later on. So there's higher expectations, but I don't know that he's going to have, like, a short leash. I really think Edmonton is the team that, if they don't get off to a good start, I mean, something's got to change because, you know, you've got a lot of those players signed.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to change the makeup of that team drastically, at least. So really, what's left to change? And to me, it would be the management or the coaching staff in Edmonton. So I honestly look around the NHL and I think to myself, like, most teams, we know what they've got, you know, like Ottawa knows that, you know, who they've got. They know the team that they have. Montreal, the same situation. Vancouver, the same situation. But Edmonton's one of those teams that has a lot of, you know, has probably the most dynamic player in the NHL, has a number of core pieces around that dynamic player in the NHL, should be, and as you just touched on a lot of that, so I don't need to delve too deeply into that. But the fact is, you've got those pieces. Now you have to be able to coach those pieces, because that's it. And so the expectations on a team like the Edmonton Oilers, I think, have to be the highest. If they get off to a great start, then all is going to be peachy keen. And even if they have a bit of a mid-season lull, as long as they put themselves into a position to be fighting for a playoff spot, I think they're okay.
There's a lot of similarities. Sorry, as I interrupted you, but there's a lot of similarities.
Actually, I was to you. Talking
okay.
To you.
There's a lot of similarities.
I wasn't talking.
Oh, you were about to, and then I jumped in. Between the Jets last year to start the season and the Oilers this year, in that the Jets fan base last year to start the year was sort of, you know, they were ready. They were nervous. They were frothing, especially when the Jets lost those first two games very handily. You remember going into that third game of the season on Thanksgiving Monday in Edmonton. Had the Jets lost that game in a manner similar to how they dropped the first two, all hell was about to break loose. If you're the Oilers and you start the season slowly and your fan base is already, you know, probably upset or questioning the lack of movement this offseason, it's going to be another situation where it's, you know, the red panic button is being pressed very early in Edmonton.
I disagree a little bit with what Dave said about Phil Housley in Buffalo. I agree with you, Dave. Bill Peters, first-year coach in Calgary. Calgary has to be a playoff team at the very least this year. Dallas obviously wants to get back into the playoffs, but Jim Montgomery, I mean, this is his first taste at coaching in the NHL, obviously coming from the University of Denver. So I don't think there is as much pressure on Bill Peters and Jim Montgomery, but Phil Housley, second-year coach in Buffalo, right, because he came over from Nashville. But Jason Botterill went out in the offseason, and he made several trades, right? He brought in Carter Hutton, and he made that trade with Pittsburgh, and he brought in Connor Sheary, and he made the big trade with the St. Louis Blues, right? Ryan O'Reilly going over to the St. Louis Blues, and we saw Patrick Berglund come over. We saw Vladimir Sobotka. There was a bunch of players involved in that trade. So I think there's a lot of pressure on Buffalo early on because of what we talked about earlier in the show. Buffalo was the worst team in the league last year. Rasmus Dahlin, early favorite for the Calder Trophy right now. I mean, you've brought in a bunch of players we talked about. I mean, the goaltending should be better this year. The defense should be better just because Rasmus Dahlin is that talented. And then when you add in guys like Connor Sheary, and I'm forgetting somebody that they recently traded for, Skinner.
Jeff Skinner from Carolina.
Jeff Skinner was acquired. So, you know, you bring in Skinner and Sheary, and you make that trade, and you change the dynamic by bringing in, you know, Berglund and Sobotka from St. Louis. And I think there's a lot of pressure for this team to get into the playoffs this year.
It's another good argument. We'll have to keep an eye on what's happening in Edmonton. We'll have to keep an eye on what's happening in Buffalo. And shout out to Chris on Twitter, who just sent us a gif of Bruce Boudreau in Minnesota. There's another coach who might be under some pressure to get their team off to a good start. When we come back, Aaron Portsline joins us. He covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus. We'll talk about the Blue Jackets, talk about Panarin, talk about Bobrovsky. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live Saturday morning on TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Sean Asor doing a great job behind the board. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Aaron Portsline. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus. Aaron, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Good to be with you.
Likewise. It's been too long, Aaron. We haven't had you on in a while.
Yeah, what's up with that? I was starting to take it personally.
Don't take it personally. Most people would rather avoid us like the plague, so we appreciate you joining us on this Saturday morning. You know, Aaron, in our previous segment, we were talking about, you know, teams and coaches and GMs that might be under pressure to start the season. We know that both Tortorella and Kekalainen just got contract extensions, so they're not under pressure in terms of a contract point of view to start the year. But for this Columbus Blue Jackets team, most people forgot they had a 2-0 series lead on the eventual Stanley Cup champion Washington Capitals. Is this a pressure-packed season for this Columbus Blue Jackets team, given the uncertainty surrounding Artemi Panarin and Sergei Bobrovsky next season?
Yeah, well, it was a 2-0 series lead on the road, too.
Yeah.
Won both those games in Washington and came home up 2-0. Yeah, it absolutely is, and I think you're right to point out it is pressure, not in terms of them being able to keep their jobs, because they did sign those extensions, but this is absolutely I think you can fairly say the most difficult stretch that Yarmo has faced with this team. He's got a really good team, and if Bobrovsky and Panarin were here beyond this year, you'd say, well, this team is building towards something and may have a chance to take a run at the Stanley Cup. I don't think that's crazy, but the uncertainty is enormous. And, I mean, really, there's no, you know, short of Panarin saying, I changed my mind, I do want to be here. There are really no good options here for Kekalainen. Does he trade him now for a prospects and draft picks, which is what he apparently has been offered? Does he hold on to him and trade him at the trade deadline for prospects and draft picks and take him out of a team that could be, you know, who knows? They could be leading the Metro or second in the Metro, and you're going to pull your best player out and trade him at the trade deadline? That's unthinkable. You know, there are no, and that's just Panarin. We haven't even gotten to Bobrovsky yet. Two-time Vezina Trophy winner. The guy who, above all others, raised the bar in Columbus in terms of what this franchise has accomplished. And I don't see any easy answers for him. This is a really, really difficult stretch.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned that there aren't any easy answers right now when it comes to Artemi Panarin, but are you leaning towards the Blue Jackets holding on to Panarin for the majority of the season and, as you mentioned, trading him before the trade deadline, even though that's not ideal, especially if, you know, you're in first or second in the Metro Division? But we know that they don't want to lose him for nothing, similar to what happened with John Tavares and the New York Islanders. But is it more likely that the Blue Jackets trade Panarin, whenever that is, and then sign Sergei Bobrovsky to the contract extension at some point between now and February?
I think the tricky part with Panarin is, you know, if he has his sights set on just going to certain cities, those are the only places, the teams that can sign him to a contract extension, those are the only places that are going to give the Blue Jackets a return that helps them today. So you're taking a step back if you're Yarmo Kekalainen. If he were to get a trade offer today that provides them a top six left winger along with some future help, I think he would do that. I think there is faint hope among some people with the organization that maybe Panarin may change his mind. But, I mean, this, you know, what do you do? The theory being, if all I can get now is all I can get later, I'll take it later and get 60 games out of him. But again, that isn't ideal either. He's painted them into a corner here. He's not done anything wrong, of course. It's just an awkward and unfortunate situation if you're the Blue Jackets.
Now, Aaron, last season the Blue Jackets had the 25th ranked power play. You wrote recently about the coach Brad Larsen finding maybe a fix. Maybe you can expand on what they think that they can do more successfully this year.
Yeah, well, it was a strange thing because they had a really good power play the year before, and then they added Artemi Panarin, who's a sublime power play player. So you're thinking, wow, this is only going to get better. And it was an absolute disaster for the first 3 months of the season. I think it's December 14th. As of December 14th last season, there were two players, including Patrick Laine there in Winnipeg, who had more goals by themselves than the Blue Jackets did as a team, more power play goals. I mean, stunning ineptitude through those first 31 games. And then they made a change, and frankly, when they made the change, I don't think anybody thought it was going to work. It looked like a desperate move. They put Alexander Wennberg, who is a bit of a playmaker and likes his space, they put him in net front, which is sort of where you think of the Grizzly hardworking, the leaners and the bangers go, and Wennberg is not that. But they put him there, that allowed Atkinson to get back to the half wall where Wennberg was, and they put Foligno, who doesn't occur to many people as a playmaker, they put him in the middle of the ice, sort of the pivot guy, and then the power play took off, because, of course, that's how it works in pro sports. and they were a top 10, top 11 unit the rest of the way. And just speaking to Brad Larson the other day, that gives him an idea of what can work, but I think they have some other things up their sleeves. And I would not, and I don't think Wennberg is a big fan of being net front, so I would not be surprised to see him move to the second unit, Wennberg that is, see Foligno go net front, and maybe try Oliver Bjorkstrand in the middle of the ice, who is a pretty good vision player and could be another sort of a bonus to that. But they really haven't practiced it much in training camp yet because they still have 58 guys in camp. So there's really not a group of players. It's sort of still really spread out, but something that we'll be looking for next week for sure.
Aaron Portsline is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus. And Aaron, you mentioned Alex Wennberg, and you know he's coming into the second season after the big contract extension that he signed that's getting him paid $4.9 million per year, at least the salary cap hit of that amount. Last year was a disappointing season for him, only 35 points after the season previous where he had 59. How did the Blue Jackets get him back up to that 55-point, you know, 60-point total that he had before he signed the big contract extension?
Yeah, I think the big issue for him is staying healthy. He was in and out of the lineup a lot last year. I think the other issue, he started to see better matchups as the season went on, where at the start of the season, he was their number one centerman, and he was next to Artemi Panarin, which is great real estate for sure. But it also puts him, when they play Pittsburgh, against the Penguins' best line. He faces the number one center every night. Now, Wennberg, with Pierre-Luc Dubois having established himself as the number one, settles into a more comfortable spot. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure he's the number two necessarily right now. I think he obviously has that in him to be that player. But I could see them having a short leash with them early on. They signed Riley Nash away from Boston over the offseason. Certainly he does not have the skill set as a Wennberg, but they do believe in Riley Nash's flexibility, and maybe he looks okay with Foligno and Bjorkstrand. Maybe Wennberg dips down to a lower role if he's not performing. But I think they feel like if he's healthy and the power play is productive, there's no reason he can't get back up to that 59, 60-point plateau he reached the year before. If you add his power play numbers from the year before to last year, it gets him halfway there as it is. I think that's the case with a lot of these guys. The power play was so dreadful for so long last year that really what's changed with all of the guys that dipped last year, Foligno took a nosedive, Atkinson took a nosedive, so he finished strong at the end. Wennberg, Dubinsky, if you just work back in the power play numbers that they achieved the year before, that's really where the difference lies.
Aaron, you reported on Thursday for The Athletic that Zach Werenski has been cleared for light contact, and as you know, and you know, for those listening who don't know, Zach Werenski had the shoulder surgery in the off season. He was dealing with that shoulder problem all year long. I guess the main part, question I wanted to ask you is, does it look like he's going to be fully healthy for the start of the Blue Jacket season? And should we expect his offensive totals to be closer to those numbers from a couple years back when he was a Calder Trophy finalist?
Yeah, he had 16 goals with one arm last year. It's pretty cool.
Not bad.
Yeah, right. I mean, God knows where this guy may go if he can actually, you know, use a slap shot or sort of the punch wrister that he's so good at. To answer your first question, it looks like he will be ready. He has taken light contact, what they call controlled contact, these last couple of days. That will continue. And then I think the plan is to get him into an exhibition game late next week, one of the final two. Maybe he plays the last two, and then have him up to speed for the October 4th game in Detroit. That first game has been the target all along, obviously, because it's a season opener. But it's also Werenski's hometown. So it has great meaning for him to play there. From the moment he had the shoulder surgery, which it'll be exactly 5 months if he's back on opening night, that's been the day that he has targeted. And it looks at this point like everything's going to make it.
Now, Aaron, it's not specifically a Blue Jackets question, but it's a question for a player who pertains to both our market and your own. What kind of impact is Jack Roslovic having in Columbus? Like, we've asked you that before, but you know, now as he's getting his feet wet in the NHL, are you seeing a greater impact from Jack in Columbus?
I think so. I mean, I think it certainly grabs the attention of more casual fans that you know, they can read about how good this kid's doing in the minors. And how he was the first round draft pick. Well, now he's in the NHL. Now he's going to be in a position in Winnipeg where he's going to be a productive offensive player, you would think. He's a big deal here. Connor Murphy's a big deal here. Sean Corrali, who scored a playoff overtime goal, is a big deal here. These are the players that all the young kids in Columbus are looking up to and pointing at as a reason for them skating. I think it's one thing, you know, Rick Nash was here for a long time, and there are a lot of kids around here that got into hockey because of Rick Nash, and that's cool. But these now are kids that grew up in the same place as you did. You're working out in the same gym they did. You're skating in the rinks that they skated in. And they've all done a really nice job of coming back, and they spent a lot of their summers in Columbus. They're always on the ice with the young kids. They had a charity game this year, the AAA Blue Jackets alumni game, which sold out, raised a ton of money for local hockey programs. So it's all good. I mean, he is absolutely somebody that the young players here look up to, and the older people, the celebrity, if you will.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for TheAthletic.com in Columbus.
We're not going to ask Aaron about the big Browns victory on Thursday night.
Is it?
You can. I mean, lifelong Browns fan. I might go on a while. It was great to see. I'm impressed that you guys got into it.
Well, I mean, you know, the Browns have been, well, truthfully, I mean, you know, if they had a field goal kicker, they could easily be 3-0 right now.
They could be 3-0.
Yeah.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
I know it is nuts, but I guess the Baker Mayfield era is now here, and we'll see if the Browns are able to take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's here. It's here, and it's exciting. Several players in the room watched the game, and were totally into it. Nick Foligno, Brandon Dubinsky, a lot of those guys they're not Browns fans certainly, but they were really really. Excited by that.
Did the free beer offer make it to Columbus, or was that a Cleveland-only offer?
That was a Cleveland-only thing, but our Tom Reed went up, because he's like that, and hung out at a bar where they had the fridge. Hilarious story about it, so check that out if you want. It was hilarious, yeah.
There you go. Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets, and he's a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan. Aaron, appreciate it. We'll do it again real soon, buddy.
Okay, thanks, guys.
Take care. When we come back, we got one final segment on this Saturday morning. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve, live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Saturday morning, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg joined me in the studio. Sean Assor doing a great job behind the board. Quick programming note, next Saturday, we're going to do our fantasy hockey preview show next Saturday. So, you know, your hockey pool is likely coming up sometime in the next couple weeks. The season's about 2 weeks away from now, the start of the regular season.
By the way, are you in for the hockey pool?
I'm going to be in, yeah. Okay. I don't need to respond to the email and the people replying all to everybody else. It's just unnecessary. You know I'm in. Myself and I got God on my side with Rabbi Leibel, of course. So myself and Rabbi Leibel will try and replicate our success from the playoff pool, which, of course, we won. You know, shout out to me and Maddie for that victory. But, yeah, we'll be in for the regular season pool. That's coming up. Anyways, our fantasy hockey preview show next Saturday here. So we'll get you set for your hockey pool coming up in the next week or so, next 2 weeks. We'll get you set next Saturday here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Yesterday after the Jets game, this is sort of a fun story, a nice story. Peter Stojkovic is a Winnipeg, he was a Winnipeg-born player. He played his hockey, his junior hockey with the Winnipeg South Blues. He was a former seventh-round pick of the Atlanta Thrashers back in 2010. Spent the last few seasons with the Manitoba Moose. Never before had an opportunity to wear the Winnipeg Jets uniform. He was in the lineup for the Jets last night in front of his hometown crowd, in front of his parents, presumably in the crowd at Bell MTS Place. Dave Minuk talked to Peter Stojkovic after the game last night about his thoughts wearing the Jets uniform, playing in front of his parents at the NHL level for the first time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Just tried to kind of sit back and watch the older guys, let them do their thing, and play a safe, kind of controlled game, and try not to let what was going on kind of go to my head or anything. But it was nice to be out there with the big boys.
Did you have a moment at one point when you're like, wow, this is actually like the NHL?
You know what? It was the warm up, a lot of fun. I had a lot of like buddies and stuff come to watch the Jets all the time. So it was nice to be out there and be a part of it.
And did your family come as well?
They did. Yeah, my parents were here tonight, so that was nice that they were able to see it, and nice we were able to squeak one out there.
So in this building, so that must play a factor. Yes, in this building.
Yeah, that was huge. The older guys are great. When you walk into this room, they really make you feel like you're a part of it, and even just, yeah, like you said, being in the building and even playing against some of the guys that used to play here, like Buddy Robinson, that kind of stuff, it just makes it a little bit easier, and you're used to the environment and the surroundings, so that that did help for sure.
Was he tripping on Buddy when I saw him coming down on you? That was like a scrimmage right now.
Yeah, I've seen his moves too many times. I know everything in his bag of tricks, so he looked good out there, though. He played well, and he moved well.
Any lasting moment was your biggest moment from tonight's game?
You know what, I just kind of tried to take the whole thing in and just really enjoy it. You never know when it might be your last game, so I just tried to enjoy the whole thing.
A nice story last night, Peter Stojkovic, sort of a veteran with the Manitoba Moose. He's, you know, up to, he'll be 26 years old. He just turned 26 years old, pardon me. So, you know, played 70 games with the Moose, 72 games 2 years ago. So he's certainly a valuable member of the Manitoba Moose, getting an opportunity to wear the Jets uniform. A nice story last night, Dave.
Yeah, that was a, you know, sorry, Dave, just wanted to say, you know, that's a great piece from you. And, you know, Peter Stojkovic, as we talked about, I mean, he's a Thrashers draft pick. That's how long he's been in the Jets organization. Put up career numbers for the Moose. So good on you to get the former Winnipeg South Blue, and nice for him to play in the NHL in a preseason game in front of his family.
Well, that's one thing I think we sometimes take for granted, is that we think all prospects get into NHL games. And sometimes when you realize like how important it is for a guy to be able to get that opportunity to put on a jersey from a team, not necessarily the team that got drafted him, obviously, but to put on, especially for Peter, a guy kept putting on his hometown team's jersey. It's just a very special experience, I think, for these guys. And we sometimes take for granted that, oh, all prospects will play in an NHL game, even if it's, quote, a meaningless preseason game. That's not always the case. So I think that it does
mean not
a
meaningless
lot
for him.
That's what I mean. And so it's a nice opportunity for him and his family.
There you go. That does it for this Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to all of our guests. We were joined in the first hour by Brian Munns, Joshua Clipperton of the Canadian Press, Jameson Olive, who covers the Florida Panthers, Amanda Stein, who covers the Devils, and Aaron Portsline, who covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. In case you missed any of the program, it's available for download on tsn1290.ca, available on our website, illegalcurve.com. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Get it sent to your device automatically each and every week. A big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine local businesses because they support Illegal Curve Hockey. Big props to producer Sean, doing a great job behind the board. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.